Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock, your friends in horror since 2013, and part of the Strange Society Network. Go to @strangepodnet on Twitter for all your macabre podcasting needs. I am Johnny Numb, and tonight on another solo episode, I'm going to talk about the much-buzzed horror comedy kids flick, Psycho Gorman. But before I get into my review proper, I have a special contest announcement for our listeners. Filmmaker Chris Broadstone has graciously provided me with a few Blu-ray copies of his macabre thriller, Human No More. The film ranked number 3 in my top 5 horrors of 2020, and I'd love to get more eyes on it. For this round, I'll be giving away one copy, with some personalized extras thrown into the mix. There will be chances to win in the other Blu-rays in later episodes. So, to qualify for the giveaway, simply retweet the pinned tweet for this episode on my personal Twitter, that's @JohnnyNumb, JohnnyNumb, or for those who know me on Facebook, or just use Facebook more often, simply share the post from my personal page. I'll keep a running tally of entrants, and the giveaway will remain active until I pin the next Last Knock episode to my Twitter account. Note that the Blu-ray is region-free, so overseas listeners are encouraged to join in. Thank you, and good luck! Now, on with the show! Psycho Gorman, or PG for short, premiered on Shudder earlier this year and has a 91% fresh rating over at Rotten Tomatoes, based on 81 reviews. It comes from writer-director and special effects guru Steven Kostanski, a former member of the Astron 6 filmmaking collective. So, for those who aren't familiar as to what Astron 6 is, I'm going to just read straight from the Wikipedia page for them to maybe familiarize yourself a little bit with them. Okay, here we go. Astron 6 is a Canadian film production and directing company founded in 2007 by Adam Brooks and Jeremy Gillespie. The company later expanded to include Matt Kennedy, Connor Sweeney, and Steven Kostanski, who are now equal partners in the company. Astron 6 is known for producing low-budget, 1980s-centric independent movies that often combine horror with comedy. And most, if not all, of the individuals mentioned in that paragraph, they are involved in some way with Psycho Gorman, and they were also involved with the, to an extent, with the 2016 film The Void, which, as Wikipedia puts it, that film was intended as a departure from Astron 6's more comedic work, which it was. So now we can maybe get on to my take of Psycho Gorman. The film stars Nita Josie Hanna as Mimi Hellenbeck, Owen Meyer as her brother Luke, and Adam Brooks and Alexis Cara Hansi as their parents Greg and Susan, respectively. The hulking Psycho Gorman is played by Matthew Nineber in a latex suit, and the voice is provided by Steven Vlahos. So, as someone who's been a fan of the Astron 6 collective for quite some time, I was introduced to them thanks to Billy Crash, actually, who loaned me his copy of Manborg, which was kind of a Terminator slash RoboCop style dystopian film that was a very funny, a very reflective of 1980s post-apocalyptic Mad Max ripoffs, you know, more in the American sense than the Italian sense. But that film had a really interesting aesthetic, and obviously made a lot, quite a virtue of its low budget. So I really have Billy to thank for getting me into the Astron 6 guys. And Manborg is a film that I've introduced to other people as well, and they've also fallen in love with it. So, I mean, I think that's the mark. That's the mark of a good movie, is when, you know, you see something and you kind of, the film has a specific feel and you just know it's going to go over a certain way with other people. And I think that's a it's a good feeling, as opposed to when you're introducing someone to a movie and you're not sure how they'll take it. So basically, Manborg is like a great, that would be a great party film, like have some beers and just have a good time, just laughing your ass off. It's a really good movie. Yeah, so I fell in love with their low-rent comedic approach to sci-fi. The special effects are very good, like I said, for a low budget. And yeah, the film is a little bit has a little bit of a Creepazoids vibe in terms of what it's trying to go for, only much more comedic than that. And then came Father's Day, which took their aesthetic to even more absurd creative extremes. The film has one of the great final shots slash jokes in cinema history, in my opinion. The film is wonderfully disgusting, but also very, very funny at the same time. So I felt like that film was the Astron 6 guys kind of coming into their own as a collective and as a creative force. Yeah, and Stephen Kostansky, who directed those films, and he directed The Void, like I said, and he also directed Psycho Gorman. He's perhaps more well-known for working in the makeup department or the effects department of a lot of high-profile projects. Just to name a few, he worked on the Hannibal TV series, which I recently wrote about for Crash Palace, which was a fantastic looking show with a lot of creativity in the violence and presentation of gore and macabre tableau. But he also worked on Guillermo del Toro's Crimson Peak, the mega budget Suicide Squad from a couple years ago, and also It Chapter One. So he's definitely gotten around in the makeup and effects departments of major projects. So I gotta respect him for that. And, you know, I've seen some of his other work. He did a segment of the ABCs of Death 2, which was a pretty negligible film overall, in my opinion, but that segment took advantage of his technical prowess as a filmmaker. So, with all that to say, yeah, what about Psycho Gorman? The film has garnered a lot of hype. It premiered on Shudder, like I said, and with the social media machine being what it is, when something premieres on Shudder, it's usually followed by a flood of people watching it, and then Shudder retweeting all the best, most enthusiastic takes on a film. I almost feel like it's a sort of contest to sort of amplify people's opinions, you know. And I've talked about other Shudder films in the past, premieres on Shudder, and I've liked a lot of them, but then there are some that just totally miss the mark for me. And you know, despite the pedigree of Psycho Gorman, and all I was hearing about it, I was hugely disappointed in this film, which just doesn't fully run with its premise, I think, is the main problem. And it also, I just think, miscalculates its sense of humor and its sense of outrageousness. It's sort of like everything is slightly... it's like a movie that the sound isn't synced quite correctly. There's this weird... I had this weird disconnect throughout. Like, the tone didn't do it for me. The characters, the story didn't do it for me. Even the special effects, which are Costanzi's stock and trade, seemed very stiff, very... just very, very bad, but not in a intentionally bad way. There's a lot of characters in rubber suits, but they felt like rejects from the Jim Henson shop more than something that had been invested in with a lot of time and effort. And I probably know that that's not the case. There was probably a lot of painstaking labor put into all the, you know, the blood effects and the latex costumes and all that stuff going through this film, but it just did not come across for me at all. You know, the film starts off with a funny line from Greg, played by Adam Brooks. His daughter Mimi asks if there are monsters in the world, and he says no, but in a lot of ways humans are monsters, so yes, there are monsters in the world. And there are a couple of lines like that sprinkled throughout the film that I kind of responded to, but that was kind of the only thing I was responding to in this film. It starts off with Mimi and Luke playing a game of crazy ball, which is an obvious riff on Calvin Ball. You know, there are other various Calvin Ball, only without the absurd creativity of Calvin Ball. I'll say that. You know, there's little touches in the early going that have the potential to be humorous or character building, like the way the family knocks on walls in this weird sort of code that everybody knows to communicate stuff without talking. So, you know, that there is some interesting stuff in the early going, and PG has been buried in the earth behind the Hellenbeck's house for God knows how long, and he's unearthed, but he is controlled by Mimi, who has this gem that gives the person who possesses it total control over the actions of Psycho Gorman. So there's kind of your twist, and I feel like that's a variation on an old episode of The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy, but I can't remember which one for sure. But in any case, I had more fun with the episode of Grim Adventures than this film. So we're introduced to the Templars, who are searching for the gem, and these are the stiff rubber-suited rejects from the Jim Henson shop I was talking about earlier. So on one hand, the Templars are kind of reining the story back into serious territory, and kind of this weird, Marvel-esque Guardians of the Galaxy world building is going on. So I'm like, you have this, like, this straight-faced conflict where the Templars want to get the gem and kill Psycho Gorman, and meanwhile, when you're back on Earth, you have this forced humor of the family drama and the stuff with the kids, and a lot of this movie to me actually felt like, I'm going to make two references to Adult Swim, the old days of Adult Swim anyway. It really plays like a series of bad Robot Chicken sketches. There's a lot of forced absurdity in the film that doesn't feel natural at all. It's like, okay, you got this big, hulking, purple-veined monster who's kind of an eater of worlds, who is now sort of minimized by the fact that he's being controlled by this incredibly bratty little kid who possesses the gem. So And I mean, for at least with Robot Chicken, that show kind of knew what it was, and it used that sort of channel surfing aesthetic to justify just having a lot of disconnected sketches for a 15-minute like for a 15-minute episode. So it worked for, this would have worked maybe as a short, as a short film. 15, 20 minutes, it wouldn't have worn out its welcome. 95 minutes, it's insufferable, basically. And I mean, the next thing it reminded me of is the cybernetic ghost of Christmas Past from the future, who appeared in a couple episodes of Aqua Teen Hunger Force. It was like the chicken android guy who has always appeared and was always very self-serious. And there was one episode where I think Glenn Danzig wanted to buy him or something like that, or Glenn Danzig was in one of the episodes with the cybernetic ghost of Christmas Past from the future. But for those who aren't familiar with that character, Christmas Wiki describes it as a robot with a penchant of making houses run with elf blood and telling long-winded, incomprehensible stories about the origins of Christmas. So basically, given Psycho Gorman's penchant for extreme violence and having his long-winded stories interrupted by Mimi and Luke, he feels like a direct descendant of this character. So you have that going on, only, I wasn't a big fan of the cybernetic Ghost of Christmas Past from P Christmas. Shit. Cybernetic Ghost of Christmas Past from the future. Those weren't really my favorite episodes of Aqua Teen Hunger Force. But so maybe something about that is a reason I wasn't responding to Psycho Gorman as a character, really. With there are a few exceptions. He has some funny lines. One that I liked from early on was, "How do your short lives allow for such narcissism?" That was a good one that I happen to agree with. But in any case, I think the conceptual contrast of welding a bloody sci-fi horror flick to the featherweight drama and life lessons of a PG-rated family flick doesn't work. Mostly because the characters are so obnoxious. Mimi is a completely awful character. She's well performed by the young actress, but she is like one note shrill throughout the film. She's just an id-driven little terror, and sort of the epitomization of, what do you say, the entitlement that people feel these days. That's this character, and she, even near the end, when she shows signs of maybe changing or transforming as a character, it doesn't come off at all, unless the filmmakers were intending it to come across as totally cheesy and unbelievable, which may have been the case, but even if it was, it did not work for me. And I mean, Luke isn't much better. I mean, he's just a pathetic whipping boy throughout the film, constantly being subjected to Mimi's sadistic whims. And Greg is a lazy, unmotivated deadbeat dad. And Susan is the long-suffering mother. So, it's just, I can see sort of the blurry vision of trying to do a send-up of family films and with this contrast of extreme violence and sci-fi. But and I it's like I didn't mind the extreme elements of the film, but I was just it just annoyed me so much, this movie. It just didn't do anything for me. I was annoyed within the first couple of minutes, and then I just kept being annoyed for the rest of the runtime, to the point where it became sort of just an act of masochism finishing this goddamn thing. You know, much of the humor is derived from PG's awkward reactions to American cultural norms, which has been done many times before in movies, whether it's with aliens coming to Earth, you know, friendly aliens coming to Earth, or just foreigners coming to America, you know, and you often have a lot of jokes at the expense of the person who's an outsider or unfamiliar with the cultural norms, which is it's a tired trope, and this film doesn't do anything new with it. And I mean, there are a lot of practical and CG special effects on display that were probably done for a fraction of the cost of a big budget Hollywood films, but that's really all there is to this film. And even so, I wasn't as impressed with them as I was with the effects in Father's Day or Manborg, you know, films that were probably done on much lower budgets than this film, which was probably done on a low budget. So yeah, it just felt like there was all this effort put in service of kind of nothingness, or just a story that was maybe a quarter developed and just kind of tried to wing it for feature length. So yeah, there's no charm or spark to the characters or their conflicts. And it takes skill to make unlikable characters watchable for 95 minutes. There are many movies that have populated themselves with characters who we, you know, object to their actions, we object to their worldviews, you know, they're annoying, you know, there are filmmakers who can do a good job, though, of still giving us a plot and a story that's so well told that we stick with it, despite that fact. But I say it's a skill. You know, anybody can make a film populated with annoying characters and it can be totally unwatchable. And like I said before, the weird kind of family that sticks together redemption of the last, you know, act of the film just rang totally hollow and false to me. It just didn't come off at all. I thought it was ridiculous and just one more intolerable thing to add to this movie. So, yeah, in any case, that's, you know, I go back to the 2016 film The Void, which Kostanski directed and I mentioned a little bit at the beginning. I did not like that film either, actually. I put it probably about on the same level as Psycho Gorman. It possessed a lot of the same problems. You know, mostly there was a weak sort of making shit up as we go narrative. And that just seemed to serve to prop up a bunch of special effects. You know, it was a throwback to 80s monster movies with, you know, that specialized in practical effects, but it was just also a very stupidly written story. You know, again, it's one of those films that's just designed to float along on its special effects and hoping the critical world or the fan base at large isn't going to sit back and say, well, the story is shit, so what's the point of all these special effects? You know, I don't know. It's put them in a YouTube video and set them to some song, but it's not a feature film. So, you know, there's the same lack of balance with PG. You know, and I think it was probably a great idea at the conceptual stage, but the approach and the execution is just awkward and annoying to me. So, you know, I go back to Crazy Ball, which the film starts with, the game Mimi and Luke play, and I thought of, okay, you know, Kostanski and company grew up reading Calvin and Hobbes like so many of us, and the thing with Calvin and Hobbes, though, is that it subsisted on the contrast between Calvin's imagination, his benevolence, and his occasional sociopathy. But Bill Watterson knew how to create fresh scenarios and storylines to bring out the empathy of the character. And there's nothing like that here. There's there's more humor and emotional impact in a four-panel Calvin and Hobbes strip than there is, you know, in creativity, than there is in 95 minutes of Psycho Gorman. So part of me is just like, go and get out your Calvin and Hobbes treasury and sit and spend an afternoon reading through that, because you'll come out more fulfilled than you will at the end of Psycho Gorman. And God help us, I feel like there's a window left open for a sequel to this god-awful thing. So we'll see what happens. You know, I'm hoping Kostanski gets his groove back at some point, because The Void and Psycho Gorman are certainly not my tempo, to quote J.K. Simmons. So I can only hope that he'll try to refine whatever his next project is and bring it to a point where it's, I don't know, something interesting, something fresh that exists as a strong story outside of just the mere conceptual idea of things. So, unfortunately, I gotta go against the hype, and I gotta go against the Rotten Tomatoes machine, and I gotta give Psycho Gorman 1 star out of 5. I was very disappointed in it. However, in an attempt to end things on a positive note, I sought some feedback from listener DM Elms at Virago Ergo Sum on Twitter, who had this to say about Psycho Gorman. To me, it was like a cracked magazine movie parody come to life as an actual movie. It was pinball back glass come to life, the smell and flavor of trading card gum, just that industrial strength reaching of juvenile reactive energy. And it was so evocative of a kind of 70s monster toy energy. Like, I could imagine these fantasy characters as having come from that era as if they'd always been, and the wholly mean-spirited nature of the narrative was so clearly divested from reality or responsibility, it appealed to me on that level. I vibed big with its energy. Also, the whole nature of the girl being so entitled and so unsympathetic and so casually thoughtless, and it leading to the apocalypse just because she wants to have fun. And the energy of that carrying through the whole piece, and its commitment to the idea of burning down God and man just for ice cream, like really showing the two things on a balanced scale and saying, this is why we're going to die as a species. Bubblegum and nihilism 50-50 split. Paradoxically, I feel like the girl's portrayal is scarily close to showing a reality of everyday Walmart America in a terrifying way. She's the actual monster, of course. Taking what she wants from everyone around her at such an absurd level and in no way morally guided by a conscience. And how self-interested, vain, and petty the supposedly superhuman beings all are. And yeah, I adored it as a crude 70s movie magazine parody brought to vivid life. It's the only thing from the Astron 6 people I've actually enjoyed. So, yeah, I wanted to thank Dee for giving me a little insight into why she liked the film. And obviously, like I said before, I'm kind of in the minority here. So take my opinion for what it's worth, but I did feel like I had to kind of get get my thoughts on Psycho Gorman off my chest. So if you've made it this far, I thank you all for listening and appreciate any feedback you may have. Whatever you thought of Psycho Gorman, feel free to shoot me a tweet. And also, you know, please remember to retweet this episode or share it on Facebook once I share it on my accounts, for a chance to win a copy of Human No More. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb, J-O-N-N-Y-N-U-M-B. And you can also find my writing at crashpalaceproductions.com because Billy's a nice guy. And you can also find my writing at thescreeningspace.com, which is run by the wonderful Suze Layton. Great person, great people, writing great stuff there as well. So that's all I have for tonight. And I will talk with you guys later, hopefully with Billy at my side, figuratively speaking, over Skype. So take care and talk to you soon. Bye.